Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today I want to talk about the advice that few writers and creators want to hear. So the other day I was watching a video from a gardener, a farmer, on YouTube. The channel is called North Lawn Flower Farm. And she has a backyard garden, and she then does cut flowers and puts these bouquets out on a stand in front of her home for sale. So she was setting up her stand, showing the process, getting the bouquets together. She set it up, and she's walking away. And she said, I take a picture of all my flowers and immediately post it on Facebook and Instagram. Then she said something really interesting. I used to post on my professional pages. Then I started posting that I was open on my personal pages. That really helped me out so much. It was a realization that the people buying my flowers are really my friends and neighbors. So getting it up there really helps me out. This is a big insight, and I think it's one that a lot of people who create don't really want to hear. So I think, or at least when I talk to a lot of writers and artists and creators, and honestly, I've spent my whole life doing that, usually what they want when you think of an audience is they want strangers. They want people who they don't know to buy their work and be engaged by it. Now, of course, there's a logic to that, because without doubt, you know a very small amount of people. So if you want your work to grow, you, of course, have to think about strangers finding out about it. But I've asked people this, you know, when they have no platform and they're just getting started, you know, well, do you want to, you know, engage with people you know in your network or strangers? They're like, their whole face lights up, strangers. And I find this fascinating because whenever I speak to successful creators, people who have shared their work well, built a bit of an audience, what I run into again and again is that people that they already knew, people in their network, their friends and family, their former colleagues, whatever, have often in some way really helped amplify their career. Sometimes it's like this woman, where they are consistent customers. Other times they are people who helped introduce that person to a whole huge opportunity. And I've been thinking a lot about why we resist that. And, you know, why would we hide our creative work from friends and family and colleagues and all of that? And sometimes it's not because the writer, let's say, finds the work they're creating embarrassing or that it would have a negative impact on their job. Often we don't share with those we know because we just don't want their judgment. We spend our whole lives feeling a sense of judgment from friends and family, and sometimes that is overt judgment. You shouldn't do that. Other times it's very subtle. Oh, you're writing a book. That's great. You know, like that little subtle thing where you're like, they're saying it's great. They are recognizing that I'm doing that. Boy, do they not feel enthused. Boy, does it sound like they're holding back. You know, and I think that happens a lot in people's lives, and we feel that. Often I think people don't share with those they know because they want to feel that they've made it on their own. They don't want to feel that they've guilted or goaded people they know into supporting their work. And thereby, if my friends and my family buy my book, well, I haven't really succeeded. All these people did it out of pity, and all those sales didn't even count. They're never going to read the book, and that's not like a real sale. People feel that way. Often, they look around at all the people they've ever met in their entire lives, and they say, "Ugh, none of these people read the kind of work I write." So no matter what you write, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction or memoir, poetry, whatever, people say, "Oh no, I don't know anyone that reads mysteries. I don't know anyone who cares about this or that." We justify that, even though, of course, we can't know that. And also, and this is the thing we don't talk about enough, you know, we'll talk about target audience and genres and all that, but the bottom line is people are weird. people often don't just read one specific kind of book and only one specific kind of book ever. They read a wide range of things. They read a little sci-fi, but even though they don't love sci-fi, but this sci-fi book was a little different. And they read some literary fiction or some genre, some nonfiction, some memoir, whatever. They read a wide range of different things. And when we put these people into a box, that can be a disservice to them and, of course, to ourselves. And then often I think that the writer or creator will be really wary to try on a new identity with those they know. And that identity would be to see themselves as a writer or an author. This comes up a lot with people I talk with, that even people that I've worked with who, or I've spoken to at length, who have published multiple books, will shudder at the idea of being called an author. And I think it's a very difficult thing for people to say to people they know, yeah, I'm a writer. I'm writing a book. That's often because we are known first in other roles. We are known first as maybe a father or a brother or an accountant or a coworker or Danny from high school. And it's a very weird thing to claim a new identity as a writer, because now we feel we have to prove it with these people that we know. And it's so much easier to just kind of shrink away from that, to not share with these people, and then think, well, a new person's ever met me if I say I'm a writer. You know, it's like, you know, maybe when you were young, you dreamed about moving and going to a new school because there you had no history. You could walk in and say, I'm the goth kid, even though your old school didn't know you that way, or I'm the jock, or I'm the poet, or whatever. And I think it's work, and I think that just shrinking away from that is not always a great idea. Again and again, I found that people who find success in how they share their work and build an audience have built momentum through the people that they already know. And big publishers know this, and this happened the other day with a writer I'm working with, where one of the very first things that a publisher will do in terms of marketing is send you the author questionnaire. And this questionnaire is basically a version of This Is Your Life. What the questionnaire wants to know is every person who feels connected to you or you to them. Were you in a sorority 30 years ago? What companies did you work for? List all of them. Do you know anyone in the media or anyone who knows anyone in the media? Where have you spoken, even if it was 15 years ago? Have you ever served on any boards, joined any organization whatsoever? They want to know just every personal connection you've had in your life, because they know these people who feel a connection to you are more likely to care about your book, to create opportunities to support this book. And of course, these people might purchase the book and amplify that book to other people. It's a good reminder that we all start with no platform. We like to look at these people who have a million or 8 million or whatever followers online and think that they're just different. They've always been popular. They've always been an extrovert. They've always known how to do this. They've always had an audience around them. And that's not true. This is why I spend so much of my time reading biographies and memoir, listening to interviews and watching interviews. I do this all the time. Before I recorded this, I was watching audition videos from an 1980s movie where you're seeing actors who have since become ridiculously famous trying out for their first roles or an early role. And they're not famous, and they're scared, and they're messing up, and they're hoping they get it. And we all start out that way in one way, shape, or form. And the thing that you're developing here, and I always say this about what it means to have a platform is not you having followers online. It's not a newsletter. Your platform is having your ability to effectively communicate with other people, and of establishing a sense of trust with people you hope to reach. That's what the platform is. It's communication and trust. Whether you do that through Twitter or a newsletter or speeches or book clubs or whatever. It's that ability. And I think that you developing that with those around you is a very big first step. Because if you never learn how to talk about what you create and why with those you're already connected with, how on earth will you figure out how to do that with total strangers who have no sense of trust with you whatsoever yet? When I first started my newsletter, which I've been now sending out every week for 15 years, more than 15 years, I walked up to 9 people I worked with. And I said, hey, I'm doing this new thing. It's going to be like a newsletter about whatever. Can I send you the first copy, the first issue? Walk to another office. Hey, can I do that? Hey, can I do that? I started out with no one. The first 9 people were people I worked with and knew. I had to walk up and do the thing that we're all afraid of, a blind pitch to someone. Hey, I'm doing a thing. Can you do this thing to support me? That's how it started. It didn't start with me creating an account and putting something out there or putting a hashtag and then strangers magically finding me. It starts through the network. Not every case, but pretty darn often. And this is something I want you to think about, which is the idea of putting in the work to communicate what you create and why. I have a process that I take my clients through called key messages. This is how you define how you talk about what you create and why. And for myself, I've been redoing my key messages. Every single thing that I teach and work on with my clients, I do myself. So all the spreadsheets I use with clients, I use them myself. And I feel that a lot of this work is work that is cyclical. You have to keep going back to it. Who's my audience now? What have I learned about them? What are my messages? What are my beliefs? How, are they updated? Are there better ways to say them? So I've been starting again with literally a blank document. What are my key messages? What am I about? And I think that exercise really helps me understand how can I better communicate? What would really engage someone? What are their needs? What are their interests? And what I find again and again is that your biggest and most unexpected wins as a writer or creator will often come from your network. A distant cousin who hears about your book recommends it to a friend who then books you on a big podcast. Things like that happen all the time. Or an old coworker you haven't talked to in 8 years recommends your book to their book club. And now you have this amazing group of people reading your book. Of course, over time, your work will reach strangers. And then some of these strangers will become acquaintances. And the kind of cycle goes back again where they don't feel like strangers. They feel like a part of your inner circle. And I always think about this, that even though we dream of wider success, it doesn't really stop there. It doesn't really start there. I was rewatching this, I think, came from the James Corden video with Paul McCartney, Carpool Karaoke. And he stops, he's doing it with Paul McCartney, and they stop by Paul McCartney's childhood home. And they go through it, and Paul shows, in this room here, I was standing here, and John was there. And we wrote the song, She Loves You. And we practiced it out. And then my dad was in the other room. So we walked through here. We opened the door. And we said, hey, Dad, can we play this to you? And the first person to hear the song was Paul's dad. And Paul's dad had critiques. He had ideas to make that song, quote unquote, better. Because his dad had some musical background. And, of course, luckily, Paul and John did not take his advice. And the song went on to become massive and help launch their career. It starts like that for the Beatles. It starts like that for everyone. And I think that this is where sharing begins. It's where sharing meets with creativity. It starts, with where we are, with what we have, with those that we already know. And I'm not encouraging you to do something that would make you wildly uncomfortable. You have to always set your own boundaries. I know that personal connections can be very complex. So you do what you have to do to feel safe and comfortable. But what I find is that when you share with those you're connected with, you never quite know the magical place that it will lead. That's why I love doing what I do. It's why I encourage people not just to create, but to share what they create. As always, if you have feedback or comments on this podcast, you can reach me at dan@wegrowmedia.com. You can subscribe to my weekly email newsletter that I mentioned at wegrowmedia.com/newsletter. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter @DanBlank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.